the Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talmage, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
Kevin O'Brien.
And this is the re-recording of episode 93. Welcome back again, Kevin.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's welcome back.
Yeah. It's great to be here. It's been a while. I think the last time I was here was in December. So,
yeah,
it's been a few months, but glad to be back with my buddies.
Yeah.
All right.
Were you here at this recording, or recording here at my house?
No,
or?
That was at Mary's house.
Mary's house, okay.
Yeah, you guys were both gone.
That's right. Yeah.
That would have been when
I was out with the stroke.
Yeah, and I think it was either Thanksgiving or when my wife had my son.
It was just after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it was after Thanksgiving before Christmas.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I scrolled back up on my IRC and Mary had something about, hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving. So I know it was after.
All right. Yeah, so what'd you do this, what is it, for the last 6 months? 6 months?
Yeah, well, I'm a project manager for the state of Michigan, and I doubt most people would find what I do for a living terribly interesting, although I enjoy it. I'll just mention that I did create a new computer for my wife yesterday.
Cool.
Because she was limping along on a 32-bit Windows XP machine and was rather constrained when she was trying to open up all of the Adobe Creative Suite applications. And so I said, dear, if I can get you up to 64 bits, I can put more RAM into this thing. And
yeah.
So she's now on a 64-bit Windows 7 and has 16 gigs of RAM and a dual-core processor, so I think she's going to be a lot better off.
Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
Edit all that out.
You know, the Adobe products, they have some pretty good support for dual processor and 64-bit. So I think you went with a good choice with the new hardware.
Yeah. And I once tried to interest my wife in Linux, and after about 5 minutes on my machine, she looked at me and said, are there people who enjoy this? So, you know, I've just decided spousal approval is the most important thing here.
Yeah.
That's right. Happy wife equals happy life.
You
That's
bet.
Right. what'd you do, Matt?
Yeah, Tales from the Data Center. Well, last night I had another rsync from hell, and Snafu in the chat and I disagree about why it was... went badly for me. What happened was, when it came back up, I was getting Martian sources, blah, 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 and all kinds of ARPing and errors and things like that.
Martian sources,
that's what it said. And it was so bad, it was just flooding the screen. I had to unplug the network cable to make them stop.
Wow.
And what it turns out it was F1 and F0 had their MAC addresses reversed.
Oh.
Okay. And Snafu claims that it was because I ran Kudzu when I brought the machine back up, which is CentOS's Red Hat's hardware detection and installation program. And since it was a chassis swap, there was different hardware. So I let Kudzu run, and he says that's what caused my problems. And if I wouldn't have run Kudzu and just edited the IFCFG files, all would have been good. So.
I'd have to agree with him.
Yeah, well, we'll see in the IRC who agrees with who. So we're putting it out for a vote in the IRC.
All right. So this week, actually last night, yesterday I was mowing my lawn. And when I came in from doing all my yard work, my wife turns to me and says, the internet isn't working. And as you may remember, I have an IP Fire running on an old laptop. And when I went to check on it, I then remembered that I saw smart errors earlier that morning. And then I went back and looked at it again, and it died. It wouldn't boot. I tried to reboot it, wouldn't boot. So I went ahead and swapped the drive. I installed the OS. I configured the network settings and everything. I copied in my wireless configs, and everything worked. It did it in a half hour.
Cool.
Yeah, it was pretty fast. It was faster than I expected. And I thought, you know, it probably would have taken me that long to reconfigure one of my other routers to do the same thing.
Right.
You know.
Oh, at least.
And test it. And so yeah. But I know earlier, Kevin was saying that he would have used SpinRite to try to fix a drive.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's an actual hardware problem, SpinRite isn't going to fix it. But I don't think everything Smart reports is always purely hardware.
Okay.
So, it's worth a try as opposed to just throwing away the hard drive, you know.
Yeah. What's his name that does that SpinRite?
Steve Gibson.
Yeah, yeah. I listen to his podcast on Twit, and I hear them talk about it a lot. So it sounds really interesting. I've heard, and I've seen other people use it. We've got a couple people in the IRC that says they've used it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm looking for is something like SpinRite that will run in Linux. So because I have a dedicated, machine that does just data recovery or fix.
Sure.
So I want to see if I can find something that can do that. So if anybody out there knows of a SpinRite open source or Linux version, I know it's not going to be SpinRite, but something like it, alternative, I guess you would say.
An open source alternative to SpinRite.
Yeah. Yeah, let me know. Our show, or our email is show@smlr.us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see what comes in. I bought my license years ago, so.
Did you get unlimited upgrades with that, or?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Go back and look. I know he's working on a new version.
Okay.
Right now, but he said, you know, if you've already got it, you don't need to buy it again.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
To me, it was pretty reasonable. It was like, let's say $79 when I bought the license.
Yeah.
And that was years ago.
You're going to definitely edit all this Windows talk out, right?
this isn't Windows. It's
DOS.
It runs on FreeDOS.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, FreeDOS.
Maybe that's acceptable. Maybe.
It's still proprietary, though.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is...
Well, proprietary is not evil. I personally believe... If you want to make proprietary software, make proprietary software. If you want to make open source software, make open source software. Whatever works for you. That's why I'm a believer in the BSD license, not the GPL.
We could have a debate on that. Because we disagree on that, I know.
It's all right. You're allowed to be wrong, Kevin.
Yay! All right. Well, let's continue on.
Okay.
All right.
So Matt hates freedom.
So
no. Matt loves real freedom, not the artificially imposed, according to Richard Stallman, freedom.
All right. Hey.
All right. I'll let it go.
Kernel time.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
We had a release candidate on Sunday, the 14th of July, 2013. At 16:57 Pacific Daylight Time, Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.11-RC1, and here's what he had to say about it. It's been 2 weeks and the merge window has closed. If I missed anything, holler, but I don't have anything pending that I am aware of. This merge window was smaller in terms of number of commits than the 3.10 merge window, but we actually have more new lines. Most of that seems to be in staging. A full third of all changes by line count is staging. Merging in Lustre is the bulk of that. Let's see how that all turns out. I have to say that we don't have a great track record on merging file systems through staging. Ignoring the Luster merge, I think this really was a somewhat calmer merge window. We had a few trees with problems, and we have an ongoing debate about stable patches that was triggered largely thanks to this merge window. So now we'll have something to discuss for the Kernel Summit. But on the whole, I suspect we might be starting to see the traditional summer slump, Australia notwithstanding. Despite being a bit smaller than the last merge window, it's not like this was a tiny one, and so, as usual, I'm summarizing with the normal -RC1 merge log. And as usual, the people credited here are not the people who actually wrote the code, although in some cases, that is true. They are the people who I merged the code from. Hey, let's all start testing Linus Torvalds. So our main line is now 3.11-RC1. And stable updates on who knows when. Greg Kohartman released kernel 3.9.11 with who knows what changes. Because the only information I could find was on the main page of kernel.org, where it said on 7/21 there was a new kernel 3.9.11. And I couldn't find anything in the Linux kernel mailing list regarding an announcement. So that's all I have on that. And I have no kernel developer quote. So that is all I have for the kernel news.
All right. All right.
You left out something.
What was that?
Linus says that the kernel 3.11 will be known as Linux for Workgroups.
Oh, I was trying to avoid that, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, you know, I ran Windows for Workgroups back in the day.
I think we all did.
So, I thought that was a nice little bit of humor on Linus's part.
Yeah.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
Yes. On the 16th, we have PC Linux OS 2013.07, which is the KDE Mini-Me, LXDE, and Mate desktops. And I looked at the KDE Mini-Me. And I was wondering if they use Clyde, because that's the lightweight version,
Mini-Me?
Right? Yeah, M-I-N-I-M-E.
Where do you see that?
It's right in the name, or right in the title.
Oh, because if you read the description, down in the description,
oh, it says
minimalist KDE.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I went through and looked at some screenshots, and it looks like they just stripped it down or turned off a couple things. And it's KDE 4.10, so it's not Clyde, which is interesting. Hmm. I would think it would be less work to put in Clyde instead of
KDE. You know, once you get Akinade shut off in KDE, it becomes pretty lightweight.
Ah. And probably you'd have to turn off the hardware, or 3D acceleration or something.
If you use
to turn it down. Yeah. Well, that's what a lot of the... Isn't that the whole, like, Plasma desktop is to add the pretties and... No?
No.
Okay. All right, well, continuing on.
So maybe you're right. And I just think it's Akinade that does it, but it's probably all that other shit I have turned off, too.
It's probably a combination of all of those, I'm sure.
Right, yeah.
Continuing on the 16th, we have Web Converger 21.0, which is a Debian-based... internet-only kiosk. Internet and kiosk.
Yeah.
It's not much to say about it.
Yeah.
And moving on.
moving on, we have Salix OS 14.0.1 XFCE, which is it's a Slackware-based with XFCE as the desktop.
Whereas opposed to the normal Slackware is KDE-centric.
Yeah. Continuing on, we have OLPC OS 13.2.0, which OLPC is the one laptop per child, and they are Fedora-based distro.
Did you hear about the controversy they have with their new offering?
What's that?
It's a tablet, and it's like for rich kids. It's $150 for this tablet.
Yeah.
I think it's just
why is it for rich kids? Because their old laptops were still 150. They weren't.
Yeah, but they were usable. They were a laptop. They weren't just a tablet. I think of a tablet as a toy. I would never think of a tablet as my main computing device, ever.
Yeah.
So. Other tablets cost a lot more than that.
Right. Well, and I think that also you have
that
to.
That is a good point, Kevin. But
you have to like relook at the way you use computers, and if this is, you know, OLPC, they're really targeting like people that didn't have computers at all. You know, like think like what Africa or, you know, or.
I still think it's a divergent. It's divergent from their core mission statement.
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
Yeah.
I've never been one shy about expressing my opinion.
Really?
Really, honest.
Yeah. Well, I've always been impressed. Yeah, I've been impressed with the previous versions. I haven't looked into the new one, but the previous where it could run low power. I mean, you could hook up a little hand crank. And so if you had no electricity available to you, you could turn on the low power, which turns off the backlight, runs in black and white, and you can hand crank it to keep it charged. And I just thought that was really cool how they put those things in place. And then also the wireless network, mesh networking.
Right, and it had those extra large antennas for that to accomplish that, so you could do greater ranges.
Yeah.
So. But I don't know. I just think this tablet, this whole tablet deal is getting away from their core mission statement. So.
All right. Well, continuing on, we have on the 20th, we have Deft Linux 8, which is a Lubuntu-based distro. And it's a live DVD featuring a collection of open source tools for digital forensics and penetration testing. These distros always interest me. Because I just think it would be cool to be able to go into the, you know, digital forensics and penetration testing. Yeah.
I know a guy. Well, I don't know him. I knew people who knew him and kind of met him peripherally. But State Farm Insurance Company does penetration testing on their agents' offices all the time. Mm. Both networking and physical penetration testing.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy was a physical penetration tester. And, like, you would come in the morning to work, they would say, and there would be a rappelling rope and an expense report on his desktop.
That's funny.
So, anyway.
Cool. Yeah, but I mean, I think it's so interesting. I've actually seriously thought about going back to school and get my master's in security.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I have a friend that did that. He went into security, and he works for the NSA now. So.
Oh, no!
Well, it's either NSA or FBI or something. Yeah. One of the government
facilities.
Well,
there's a big pen testing company here local, did you know that? I can't remember they're called. The one guy at work, his ex-roommate, works for them. And also, he used to work with Carl at Secure 24, the same guy. And he works for this pen testing company now.
Oh, that's cool.
I think I know someone who works there. I have a friend who's in that line of work. So.
Yeah?
Yes.
Cool.
And he will be speaking at the Washington All Linux Users Group in September.
Ooh.
What is his topic?
Log files.
All right.
I asked him.
And how to hide your tracks in them, or?
Well, what he looks for, or what you should, you know.
Yeah.
I might actually come to
Which log files should you be looking at, and what you should be looking for?
I might actually come to a wash log meeting, Kevin.
So, yeah.
Because it's on my days
off. You have once
or
twice.
Yeah, it's on my days off now, so.
Yeah.
I might see, because I can't go to MD-Lug anymore, so you might see me pretty regularly now.
Okay.
I've been thinking about coming.
We've got a chair for you.
All right.
All right.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
All right. So at number 5, we have OpenSUSE.
OpenSUSE.
With 1372.
And trending up.
In number 4, we have Ubuntu with 1434.
And trending up.
And number 3, we have Debian with 1535.
And trending up.
And the number two spot, we have PC Linux OS with 1995.
And trending up.
And in the number one spot, we have Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3337.
And trending down.
All right.
So the only thing that surprises me, what PC Linux OS?
Why? Because they had a release.
They had a, okay.
Yeah, and then OpenSUSE had a development release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Milestone 3. But yeah. So no Mary this week. So there's no,
yeah, no distro review.
Distro review. So we'll go on to...
So we'll go on to the Ohio Linux Fest News.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. It's my pleasure. And for those of you who don't know, I am the publicity director for Ohio Linux Fest.
Publicity director. That was it. I couldn't remember your title. I said, I don't know. I think he's the programming guy.
actually not. I try to publicize what the programming guy puts together.
Director, there we
go. So, we just closed our call for talks recently, and so they're working on the full schedule, and undoubtedly as we get a little closer to Ohio Linux Fest, and that's like the second weekend in September this year, We could talk about the full schedule more knowledgeably, but there are some things I can talk about. And so, first of all, we did have last year something that we did for the first time, the what we call the career track. And so that seemed to be very successful. People like that.
Is that the one on Friday?
That was on Saturday.
On Saturday.
So it was running at the same time as the other main things. So this was something that a fellow named Warner Moore put together, in which he had people from companies and recruiting firms and what have you.
Oh, I remember that now. I remember the track now, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was stuff in there like, you know, how to write your resume,
right.
How to promote your career.
Yeah, I sat in a couple of those last week or last year, and it was really interesting.
Yeah,
the Friday training though, I think I got a lot out of that Friday training last year. I paid for the LPI training.
Right.
Didn't pass both tests. I only passed one of the tests, but I still think the training was well worth the expenditure. And this year, if you guys do it again,
oh yeah.
No, the training I'm talking about.
Okay.
If you do, I last year I took the LPI course,
mm-hmm.
and this year I'm thinking about taking Puppet, basic Puppet in the morning with advanced Puppet in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're offering it again, that's the way you offered it last year.
I think so. I'd have to. We have not firmed up all of the schedule
yet for
the Friday training. So I know there was one slot that we were still trying to fill, and we were talking to people about other things. So we've got, I know we've got someone from Red Hat involved, and I'm sure LPI is going to be there again.
I hope so, because I want to take that second test.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking I might do Linux Essentials next weekend at the Indiana Linux Fest.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they will be there.
I passed that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know. We're going to do Career Track. We're going to do the Friday training. That's the OLF Institute, we call
right.
it. That's the professional registration. Another thing that we did last year that was more popular than we could have predicted, I guess, was the newcomers track. You know, people who were just getting started with Linux.
It was. I sat in
was
on
packed.
One. I sat. I. It was standing room only. With a.
Yeah.
It was a pretty large room too. I would say there was seating
right.
for 100 people, and then it was standing room only in the back.
We
it
had standing
crazy,
room only for
packed.
For a talk about the command line. And yeah, everyone always says
that's what it was. It was the command line.
Yeah,
because I went just to hang out. I'm pretty comfortable with the command line already.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so bad about taking up a seat that I got up partway through and left because I felt that other people were there that would get more out of it. You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean that was we're gonna get a bigger room because yes, I mean it's not just that it's standing room only, but you pack that many people in, the room starts to get really hot, and you know it becomes uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So yeah, I taught in that last year. LibreOffice, obviously, because right. You know that's my.
And I went to your LibreOffice presentation at PenguinCon. You do a really bang up job.
Thank you.
On LibreOffice.
I'm going to do the same thing at Indiana. so that you know that's going to be back, and I don't know if we're going to maybe tweak the content slightly, but definitely that one we're going to be there, Then I want to talk about the keynotes, because we do have those in line, and I think we've got some people here.
All lined up already?
Or? Yeah,
all
we
right.
do.
All right.
So I will start with Mad Dog. Mad Dog always, you have to understand, Mad Dog has been really a part of Ohio Linux Fest from the very beginning. So he's always going to be there. And I don't know the title of his talk. He always does the Friday evening talk. So I'll probably be around 5 o'clock.
It was excellent last year. I've heard Mad Dog talk 3-4 times now.
Yeah.
And I have never gone away from one of his talks disappointed. Ever.
Exactly. So. Yeah. I mean, I'd pay money to hear him read the phone book. So I don't know precisely what it's going to be. I assume everyone knows Mad Dog. I'll just mention he's executive director of Linux International, director of Project Kawa.
His full name is John Mad Dog Hall.
Right.
So,
yeah.
If you wanted to Google him out there.
Yeah, and he's. I heard him say at one point that he keeps the Mad Dog as his nickname because he lost his temper once, and it reminds him not to do it again. this is a guy who has been involved with Linux so early on that, you know, he tells the story about how he was working at Digital Equipment and got one of their machines over to Linus in Finland,
yes,
when no one had ever heard of him or anything else that he got.
Well,
one of those.
He also tells that story about how he was the first person that met Linus when he got off the plane here.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. And I think he's godfather to one of Linus's kids.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's Mad Dog. That'll be the Friday, because he always does the Friday evening one. We have, and I don't know when these keynotes, there'll be three of them on Saturday. So usually we do one in the morning and then two at the end of the day. I don't know which is going to be which, at this point. But we've got Robin Bergeron, and Robin is the project leader for Fedora. Among other things, and she has also been involved there as the marketing team leader. She's serving as program manager, so in other words, very heavily involved, and I think that's going to be very interesting. Fedora is really important. I believe from what I understand, Fedora 19 is setting the stage for the next version of Red Hat.
So. Yes. Well, way down. What's happening in Fedora is probably minimum 3 to 4 years out of happening in Red Hat.
Okay.
So.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that far.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was like two versions.
No.
Huh.
Well, two versions is 3 to 4 years.
No. I mean, we had...
No,
we had 18 just,
yeah,
3 months ago.
I don't know.
Right, right. No, but Red Hat.
Oh.
Three or four, to be two versions
of Red Hat
is 3 or 4 years.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah.
That's what
I misunderstood that.
Yeah.
So, that's Robin Bergeron. Another person, and if you were following Mad Dog's talk, you would already know about this person, Mark Spencer. Because Mad Dog loves to talk about Mark. Mark was the fellow who originally was the author of the Instant Messaging Client game, GAIM.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that, and that which is now Pigeon, but
yeah.
He did his game.
Pigeon.
Yeah,
he uses it every day.
Right. But what you might know, if you don't know about game or Pigeon, is Asterisk.
Oh.
So this is the guy that created Asterisk.
You know, I went to a talk once by these two guys
mm-hmm.
who, the company they worked for was a debt collection company.
Uh-huh.
But they used Asterisk to manage all their phones. And if you've ever been on the wrong end of a debt, you know how those MFers call you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be running a top-notch phone system. And it was a really good talk. Anyway, sorry.
Right. So he had, apparently Mark Spencer was at university, at Auburn University, and then set up a company for Linux technical support. He didn't have enough money to purchase a PBX solution for his company, so he wrote one. And now his company, Digium,
Yep.
supports Asterisk.
And, yes, they do.
So, you know, I think that's going to be interesting. And Mark is like 26. So, you know, he's done more than all of us put together, and he's still a kid,
wow.
basically. So,
yeah.
You can see why Mad Dog loves to talk about him.
Yeah.
Now, the last here, I think, should be of interest, because you guys have been talking about BSD more lately. We mm-hmm. have Kirk McCusick.
Ah.
So, Kirk McCusick is, I don't know if you would call him a co-founder of BSD. I think you can make an argument for that.
Well, I think co-founder is a little strong.
Well, he shared an office with Bill Joy at Berkeley.
I know.
And so he's done a number of things with FreeBSD and BSD in general. So he had he designed the Berkeley Fast File System, and
which became UFS.
Right. Mm. So been involved with that. He's also been involved with Usenix. For those of you who are familiar with that, which is sort of the Unix Association, and I believe the. They called it Usenix because if they tried to say Unix, AT&T had the trademark on that term and wouldn't let them do it. So they just changed it slightly and said, we'll call it Usenix. But, you know, that's sort of the sysadmin group, and he's been president of that twice, most recently from 2002 to 2004. He's still on the board. He's on the editorial board of the ACM Q magazine. So, we got some good speakers coming this year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be...
I would want to hear him almost as much as I would want to hear Mad Dog. So.
Yeah, it does sound very good.
I'm going to hear them both.
Just for the keynotes, I'm looking very forward to Ohio Linux Fest this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think we got some great people. And real excited about that. And I'm just waiting for... our guy, Phil Ritchie, who is actually the programming guy. And so waiting for him to start putting together the schedule. And I know a number of people I know have submitted talks. So I'm sort of hoping that, the ones that are friends of mine, I actually have absolutely no influence on it.
You're not on the selection committee?
No, I'm not on the selection committee, and I've been more or less told, at one point I had sort of mentioned that, well, this guy submitted a talk, and he's a podcaster, and he gives us good publicity, and they said, get the hell out of the room, we don't, So I said, okay, fine. So we're apparently ethical at OLF. We
don't. Shocker.
Yeah. Okay. So I just point that out in case you think that, you know, we're trying to stack the deck or whatever. I sort of gently inquired and was slapped down. So Phil and I think Moose probably gets involved a little bit too on that, but it's mostly Phil, and it just basically we just try and put together as good a program as we can from the talks that we have, and try and get a balance. So you know, we try to get things that cover a variety of topics at a variety of, you know, expertise levels. So yeah, we're going to have a few things for beginners and a few things intermediate, a few that are advanced. Every year we're going to get the feedback that we didn't have enough talks on this, whatever that person's hobby horse is.
Right.
And it's like, well, we had three. Like, what? We had three on that, you know? It's only one conference.
You know, I haven't had this problem at OLF. But at other conferences, I've had this problem where there will be like three or four talks that I really want to attend, and it never fails. Always two or three of them are happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
mathematically, I think it can be proven that's going to happen to people. So, you know, and if
no, but you guys,
if the biggest problem we have is people saying I couldn't attend all the talks I wanted to, that's a problem I want to own.
Right. But you guys do a really good job of keeping the tracks separated, so that I maybe don't want to go to anything in the beginner track. So,
well, it's not for you.
Right. The stuff I want to go to is lined up in the track I want to go to. That's why I've never experienced that conflict at OLF. I think you guys do a nice programming job.
Thank you.
As compared with other places.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like it. The only problem with being the publicity director is I don't get to see as many of the talks as I'd like to because I'm running around doing stuff.
Why? Publicity's over by then.
I live blog the event. Among other things, and there's stuff that that I get asked to do that is quite legitimate. We have sponsors, we have companies that come, and so you know, very often I will be asked by the fellow who runs the sponsorship thing, oh, you know, they would like you to put something out on Twitter and Facebook to mention, like, remember last year Rackspace had a challenge to, sit down and diagnose
Tony
a problem.
Tony led me astray on that. We won't go any further in the discussion.
Well, when they did that, it was like, you know, put that out on the social media, I take photos of things. And so.
HP had a nice setup there last year, too, showing off that server.
That was cool.
That was a nice rig.
So I make sure I hit all of the keynotes. So I can usually manage to do that. And then, of course, the other thing is I'm one of the instructors in the newcomer track. So that also. But that's one of the reasons why I love going to Indiana Linux Fest is that I actually get to take in some talks.
Yeah, I've never been to ILF.
It's nice.
How does it compare with OLF?
It's smaller.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically, it's just smaller.
They're having it at a hotel this year. I saw it.
That's the same hotel it's been at every year.
Is it? I thought it was at the same college. Place. I thought it was at a college.
Well, yeah. 6-7 years ago it was at a college.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not this the same as year? The one that was in the past. So, yeah, this is the third year.
Yeah.
Lord Drakenblut and some other folks out there kind of got this going, and you know, I certainly love giving them a little bit of publicity love as well here. So that is next weekend in Indianapolis. So I think the website is indianalinux.org. Just Google Indiana Linux Fest, you'll find it, and it's at the Wyndham Hotel West in Indianapolis. So
yeah.
I will be there. If you haven't been to one of my LibreOffice, and this is just LibreOffice Writer, I keep narrowing the focus down each time because I discover there's too much to talk about. So I'm going to be doing a presentation on that, and otherwise I'm looking forward to all of the other talks I'm going to be able to take in.
Cool.
Well, all right.
You know, yeah. I went last year, and I so want to go this year. It just doesn't look like it's going to happen. I'm bummed out.
Yeah.
Anyway, but speaking of Lieber Ryder, but Matt sent us an email with his notes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said open, I accidentally hit open with Archiver instead of open with Office, LibreOffice. And it actually unpacked it like it was a zipped file.
Oh,
and
sure.
It showed all the different files that are contained within
which was
very interesting.
Basically XML is running in the background.
Yep.
And it's not just LibreOffice. You'd see the same thing with Microsoft Office.
Right. And I suspected that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how everything is. It's all XML, and it's all, you know, basically it's like a zip file that's all packaged mm-hmm. up. That's why Archiver was saying, oh, I could handle this.
Yeah.
Well, that's
how it can keep all the settings and everything separate, and then you have the actual content also in there. So that's very cool.
But I think you'd find it easier to read if you actually opened it in LibreOffice.
I did open it in LibreOffice. But it was just interesting how you could see all the different files and folders that was contained. It was neat.
Yeah, since, you know.
There should be a knot in there, by the way.
Mary isn't here, and so we don't have the distro review, and we don't have Is It Alive,
and
all of that. So I usually when I come on here, aside from OLF, I will frequently pick up a something that interests me that's going on. And Google Play Music, I suggested, I'm writing an article right now for Full Circle Magazine on this. And so
cool.
It's kind of on my mind. And so this is basically, I like most people, I enjoy listening to music. I listen to a lot of it. You know, I've got 100 gigs of files now that have ripped from CDs and things like that.
And,
you know, you start buying tracks online and what have you. And, you know, I started looking at all of the streaming options. And I remember Spotify, you know, I was hearing about Spotify, and it was available in Europe, but it was not available in the United States for a long time. And then it finally was available, and I got an account there, and then I had an account with Pandora. And, you know, they were doing different things. I mean, Pandora was like a radio station. You say, well, I like this artist, and they say, well, then you probably like these three or four five other artists that are very similar.
Right, and you could thumbs up and thumbs down songs,
mm-hmm.
skip songs when
right.
you really didn't like them and things like that.
What do they call that system? The music DNA or...
yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's pretty cool.
So they... I liked Pandora, you know. I think the... trying to remember, it was like $36 a year or something for Pandora. I mean, you could get
that's
a free
one. That's like $3 a month.
No, it's not bad.
But
I think if you went month to month, it was like $3.99. So you'd save a little bit by getting the annual. The thing with mobile streaming is that if you're on your phone, when you start adding advertisements into the mix, just sending the ads starts eating up your battery, eating up your bandwidth, and everything else. So, I mean, that's why, generally speaking, I would purchase the ad-free version if it's anything I'm going to use. And, you know, plus the fact that it sort of supports the people who are creating the product. So I've never had a problem with that. And for the same reason, I had a $10 a month Spotify account, and with Spotify, the thing was that you had access to all of these tracks, and you put together playlists of things you were interested in, and you know that was good. I enjoyed that. And then a few years ago, just about 2 years ago, Google said, well, we're going to do our own music thing, Google Play. Well, it didn't call it that. They called it Google Music at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said is, upload your tracks, and then you can stream them off of our servers.
Yeah.
So, initially, that was really the whole thing was, you know, here's a place to put the music you already own in the cloud and stream it. All right, it's cool, and it didn't cost anything. So, I did that.
Was there a storage limit?
It was like 20,000 tracks.
Yeah, it's still 20,000. I think 20,000 tracks. Even the ones you purchase, you're limited to 20,000 songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And there was some. There was also a similar thing with Amazon that, you know, you would get storage and then you could stream from it. But
yeah,
with Amazon, it was like, well, if you bought the track from us, it doesn't count against your storage limit.
Hmm.
So the different wrinkles about all these things.
Right.
So I had 3 or 4 different music things going on, and I have to pick which one I wanted to use, you know, depending on what I wanted to do. And then Google, very recently, I mean, within the last month or two, they started doing this whole reorganization of their offerings around the idea of Google Play. And Google Play is sort of this umbrella that is music, books, magazines,
yeah,
TV,
I get
movies,
a magazine,
the app store.
I subscribe to Linux Format through Google Play.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also buy songs on Google Play Music. I have 6 bands. Anybody uh-huh. that can name 3 of the 6 bands I have wins a dollar.
I wouldn't even begin. So I have a feeling that in this, as in many things, you and I have no overlap in our tastes.
I would bet you're wrong.
Okay. All right. So anyway, we'll see, because I'll mention one or two of mine as we
all
go
right.
along. So what Google announced with Google Play Music, and I think right now it may only be available in the United States, but it's very clear they intend to roll it out. And, of course, the issue, as always, is that you have to negotiate deals with the rights holders.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you across the pond, just remember how long we had to go without Spotify. So, but what they did is they took all of the good stuff and mashed it into one service.
Hmm.
And it costs less than doing everything separately, and it puts everything in one place. And when they first announced it, I went and signed up right away, because they said, you know, this is brand new, so you're going to get, I don't know, it was 30 days or something free to just check it out. So I set one up right away and started playing with it, and within a week it was like, oh, all right, this is the keeper. So what it does is they have made the arrangement with all of the rights holders to have you know, millions of tracks available that you can stream in return for a monthly fee, and the monthly fee now is, I think, $9.99.
Do you do it by the month?
Yeah.
I don't. I just buy the individual songs. That way I own them.
Well, you can do that, too. I mean, I've got a subscription from eMusic, for instance. So, you know, I'll get 15 or 20 tracks every month as part of my subscription that I own. But I just upload them when that happens. You know, this is, it's like Spotify in that it's like, well, here's all these tracks. What do you want to listen to?
Hmm.
Now, I would tell you that Spotify has more tracks than Google does at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In either one, there are going to be those situations where, but I really love this obscure track.
I listen to some pretty off-the-wall stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to the Dead Milkmen and the Dead Kennedys, and And I have not found a track that I was looking for that Google Play did not have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have. So I listen to more obscure stuff than you. But the thing is, if it's a track that I have, no biggie. I just upload it.
Yeah.
And I've done that. So I was looking for a particular track by Jefferson Starship that I happen to like. And I went looking in Google Play Music. They didn't have it. Fine. Just
did they have any Starship? Just not.
Yeah, they did. They didn't happen to have.
Now, was it a what Jefferson I was Airplane track you were looking for?
Or was this was a Starship one. I'm being very precise. They had all the Jefferson Airplane stuff that I was looking for. And that's been one of my favorite bands since the 60s. But you know, that's the nice thing about the upload feature, which, as far as I know, Spotify never had that capability, is, you know, I can always upload. But other than that, you know, I put together these tracks. So I've got playlists. I've got a Jefferson Airplane playlist. I've got a Frank Zappa playlist.
Do you really do that? Because you know what I do? I keep all of my songs in one big playlist. And then just, I play that one big playlist. Well,
then I've also got a couple of mix ones. And one is a rock mix, and one is a jazz mix, and one is a sort of contemporary Celtic mix. So, you know, you put those together, and so I, you know, in all of those, I can combine stuff that I have with stuff that they have available on the service. We got these playlists. Then they also created a radio feature like Pandora.
That's what I was going to ask about. Yeah, that's cool.
They've got that. So, like, one of my favorites is there's a Canadian guitarist named Don Ross who does fingerstyle guitar, and I love what he does. And so I just put that in and as a radio station, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah. And we've got all these other artists, most of which I also am familiar with. And it's like, yeah, that's right. That does deserve to be here on the same list. So you get Antoine Dufour and Andy McKee and, you know, Tommy Emmanuel and all of those kinds of folks. Basically, for my $9.99 a month, I've got a radio station feature. I've got the playlists. I can upload any of my own stuff. I have it all together in one place. And now at home, I have that open on one of my my media playing machine all the time. And so just any time I just click a button and say, this is what I feel like listening to right now, and away we go. I think I listen to more music now than I did a few months ago because I like the way this works so much.
That's cool. Yeah. You know, I've recently gone over to the more of the streaming services just because I used to spend so much time on making playlists, and then, you know,
that's
I would spend hours and hours and hours.
And you know what the cool thing about one great big playlist is? One minute, it'll be The Doors. And then it'll go from The Doors to Johnny Cash. And then from Johnny Cash to The Ramones.
Right. But there's sometimes I want to listen. I don't feel like listening to Ozzy Osbourne when.
When would you not want to listen to Ozzy?
Well, that's why you have different playlists.
No.
Exactly.
Disagree.
Well, and the other time I used to have parties and I'd have music playing in the background. And I would know who the people are going to be at my party, and then I'll make a playlist of things that I think those people would like, and leave off, like, the hard metal stuff, or heavy metal.
If they're not going to want to listen to the heavy metal, they're not at the party.
Anyway, so that's very cool.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. You know, I was talking to Ronnie Tucker, who is the editor of Full Circle magazine, when I said, you know, I wanted to do this, and he said, yeah, I've been using it a lot, I love it. And I, all right, Ronnie, you're not in the U.S. And he said, yeah.
They've got these services that allow you
to, you know, if
I use two different ones that let me be from different countries.
Right. So Ronnie's a smart guy. So yes, if you're not in the United States and you want to check this out, you know, if you can
and
figure out a way to have a credit
card.
If you
use the Chrome browser, you can use the Hola app for free.
Yeah.
Hola will say you're from anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I think the credit card address might be an issue, but I'm not quite sure what Ronnie did to get around.
I
think he had a... I don't know if you can use PayPal. I think this may be tied to Google Wallet because it's Google.
I don't remember how I...
You know?
I've got something stored on Google where I just click buy the song and it pays for it.
Yeah, well, that would be Google Wallet. Yeah, so... at least that, as far as I know, that's how Google does these things, but...
Yeah.
And I have that, you know, obviously tied to a credit card account. So... That was my report on Google Play Music.
Very
well,
cool.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you
I
want
think
a detailed write-up? Oh. Look at Full Circle Magazine. It'll probably come out in a couple of months.
All right. Yeah, let us know when it comes out, and then
we'll plug it for you.
Plug it, sure. Yeah.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
Well, you see, the news was kind of light this week. I only have one story, and it's the H closes up shop. They stated the reason they were closing down is due to an inability to monetize the traffic into a working business model. Even though they produced many high-quality stories and were one of my go-to places for ideas, they just couldn't turn that corner. Mm. They will be missed. Their last published story can be read here, link in the show notes. It is titled, The Final H Roundup. The story is an all-time top 10 list of stories published on the H.
Wow. And it's been around for a while, too, huh?
6 years.
Oh, really? I thought it was a lot longer than that.
6 years, and only four of that was as the H.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Yeah, I know Fab... from Linux Outlaws. He's been a writer for them. And I wonder what's going to happen there.
I'm guessing we'll find out on the next Linux Outlaws.
Yeah. All right. News. Well, it's kind of light for news.
Do you have anything, Tony?
I don't. It's been a busy week for me at work, and I haven't had time to do any research. I thought there was something that came up. I wanted to talk about it, but now I can't remember because I didn't make notes. Oh, man. Anyway.
That's it, then.
Wow.
He closes up shop.
You know, I see one story on here that looks interesting. It's data.gov gets an open source revamp.
Didn't see it.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, because it's coming from the White House, so I'm sure you
avoided
it.
Oh, yeah, I'm right on that.
But it's part of their making the government data more reliable, machine-readable and open for reuse and re-whatever. So there's I'll put a link in that. The new version is called next.data.gov. It says it's an early preview for data.gov. So it hasn't gone live yet. So you can see the preview for it. I'll throw that in the IRC chat.
Lua did bring up an article that I saw this morning that I wasn't going to talk about, but I will since he brought it up. It was, I don't know if any of you all saw it, it was all the Ubuntu forums were hacked.
Oh, I see that.
If you had an Ubuntu forums account, some nefarious character now owns your password, username, email address.
Oh, no.
Every single Ubuntu forums user is compromised. Everyone.
Cool.
Do you know, is that just the Ubuntu forums, or is that Launchpad?
They said just the Ubuntu forums.
Okay.
Like, if you go to Ubuntu forums right now, there's a page, there's a splash page that says, we're down.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's pretty bad.
Yes, it is.
You're strongly encouraged to change your password.
Yes.
On other services, yeah.
Yeah. You know what I said? My comment was about it.
What's that?
Well, they were probably running Ubuntu on those servers. What they expect?
Nice. All right.
Yeah, but the general rule.
You don't use the
any
same password
system
for everything.
Can get hacked.
Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah. It well, it's not just can. I mean, it's going to. So you need to assume that any external service.
No. Any system will be attacked.
Yeah.
If you're properly secured, unless there's a zero day you're unaware of, you can prevent being hacked.
Right. But if you're using free services out there, you need to assume that at one point it could be hacked.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, what I do is I use a different password for every online account that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And that would prevent the problem with them hacking one service and then getting to all my accounts.
I'm guessing the NSA could hack anything they really wanted to.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Jess says to use LastPass.
Yeah. I use LastPass. I think it's great.
I use an encrypted text file. I keep a text file with my passwords on my laptop, mm-hmm. and then I decrypt it when I need a password, and then I re-encrypt it.
Yeah. Very cool. I guess, I don't know, maybe we should just continue on.
Just continue on. I feel
Mary has so much that she adds in for the news part, and I feel bad just leaving it with one story. But, Kevin, you've talked about a lot, too, so yeah. I think... Mm-hmm.
We've got time.
Yeah, we filled the... Yeah.
So, on to our toolbox.
Tools from the toolbox.
Our toolbox this week is nifty stuff with SSH.
That's right. So, most people probably think of SSH as just a shell that you can connect into other servers using it. But there's a whole lot more you can do with it. And I'll let Matt talk a couple of things that he does.
Yep. The first thing is that here's our first situation. We have a PC at home called My PC, and we want to connect to a computer at the office called Work. But we are only allowed to connect to a jump server called Gate. Usually, you would take two jumps to get there. First, you would connect from My PC to Gate, and then you would connect from Gate to the Work PC. Now, let's take a look at how an SSH tunnel can help. On My PC, we run this command, SSH minus uppercase I, my user ID, minus uppercase L, 7777, colon work, colon 22, gate, cat dash. This means open an SSH connection as user, my user ID, to host gate, and run the command cat dash. For however long as this session is open, redirect all traffic directed to port 7777 on the local machine port 22 on machine work. Now we can use any SSH command, such as SSH, SCP, or SFTP, to connect directly to work through the tunnel. For example, you could do SSH minus P 7777 localhost uname minus A, and that'll make an SSH connection for you right to the work computer. You could use SCP minus lowercase p minus uppercase p 7777 localhost colon data file 1.txt, and that will SCP that file for you. And the same thing, SFTP hyphen 0 port equals 7777 localhost, and that will make an say that three times real fast.
I knew him when he was articulate.
Yeah. SFTP connection for you. And now how it works. you initiate an SSH process on the local machine, my PC, and that creates an SSH connection with the SSHD server on gate. It uses the default SSH port 22 on the server side. In addition, because we have used the minus uppercase L option, the local SSH process accepts local connections to port 7777 and sends all data received on this port through to the connection to gate with some marking. This is from tunnel 7777. The jump server gate has been informed through the minus uppercase L option that whenever it receives data marked with this, this is from tunnel 7777, it has to open a connection to the computer known as work on port 22 and forward the data to it. The second situation is we want to run rsync over an untrusted network, e.g. the internet. To use rsync over SSH, you pass it the dash E switch like this. Rsync dash AVE SSH user at remote machine : remote directory to sync : local directory to sync. Now, let's break that command down for you. First, you have rsync, which is a program that synchronizes files and directories from one machine to another. Then you have the dash AVE switches. So A stands for archive mode, which means preserve all of the attributes of the files and the directories. Then you have the minus V, which stands for increase verbosity. With one V, it lists all of the files as they are synchronized. And then with the dash E, that means you specify the remote shell to use, and in this case, we are telling it to use SSH. Then SSH equals the shell slash service we are using to connect. And then user at is the user on the remote machine we are connecting to. Remote machine can be anything that will connect you to the correct machine, e.g. a host name or an IP address. And then your : mount directory to sync equals the remote directory that you're syncing. And then the space local directory to sync equals the local directory to be synchronized. Notice the trailing slash on the remote and local directories. What this does is copies the contents of the directory, not the directory. As an example, let's say you are syncing home menders to local backup. The local backup directory will contain everything inside home menders, but not the parent directory, menders. If the trailing slashes were left off, you would have a directory called menders inside local backup, called menders, containing everything that is inside the remote directory, menders. By default, rsync only copies files and directories, but does not delete anything from the destination when they are removed from the source. If you want the directories to be exact copies, then you need to include the option dash dash delete, which will delete all the files from the destination directory that have been deleted on the remote directory. And by default, it deletes the files before the transfer so as to make room and speed the process. Using SSH as to run rsync over... I have a typo in this line. I have no idea. Using SSH to run rsync over encrypts the data over the network and also takes advantage of any trust relationships you already have established using SSH client keys.
Very cool. Yeah, and I've used that, and that's using rsync and SSH.
Yeah.
It's a very secure way to run backups, and then you can script it so that it runs automatic backups for you.
When you script it, leave off the V.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Good work, man.
Yeah, and I've messed with the port forwarding, that first part. Not how you implemented it, but where I have, like, one person SSH in with the port, forwarding a port, and then I SSH into the same server forwarding a port, and then I can connect over to their computer. That way, if there's any firewalls in between, because they're connecting out, as long as this SSH is allowed out, then, then there's no problems there. And... I really didn't get it to work reliably for what I was trying to do. So I ended up not ending up using it that way. But what I was doing is I was trying to set up a way to do remote control of a PC and using my own server that we would, as like a middle that you both connect into.
Now, was the third PC not the one you controlled remotely and your one here, but the third PC, what was that running?
It was, well, I was getting set up to run on any OS, on Windows, Linux, Mac. And because Mac and Linux already has SSH built in, then all they'd have to do is run the script that I send them.
Right.
In the Windows one, I'd have to have them copy down a few files, and that just became complicated, so that's why I don't use
Sigwin.
It.
Sigwin, you would have to just about install Sigwin.
No, there's PuTTY. There's a command line only version of PuTTY, and I can't remember what it's called at the moment. But you could script it in, you know, running a batch script.
Really?
Yeah, and that
and
would do the same thing.
It'll just open a connection right into their system?
Yep, from there, like, I would open up, like, 5900 for VNC, and then I would tunnel that over to, you know, over SSH to my own server, and then I can connect through to it. And I got it to work a couple times, but not reliably, so I ended up dropping that. But what I do use, and mainly I use this, it's SOX proxy forwarding. And I mainly use it for networks that it's untrusted networks. So if you're at like the coffee shop or somewhere where a public network where you don't want anybody trying to tap into what you're doing, you know, if it's not already a secure connection. So what you do is use the D command, capital D, and then the port number. So it's SSH dash capital D and then 1080. And then the username and password that you use to connect, or username, and then it'll prompt you for the password. And what it does is it tunnels 1080 on your computer, the local host, over to that server. And then all TCP traffic can be tunneled through that SOX layer, and it's a secure connection. You know, and then it leaves out to the internet from whatever server you're SSHing into. So if you say I'm at the coffee shop and I can SSH into my home computer, mm-hmm. I do this with a capital D into my home computer, and then also on your computer you have to tell it to do a global proxy through localhost 1080, and then it sends all traffic through. I've tested this by using now I can't think of the tool. What's that tool that you can watch all the Wi-Fi traffic?
And Wireshark? What connection?
Wireshark? Is it Wireshark?
Wireshark or Etherape?
Etherape. That okay. was the one. And so from your computer, you can, or on Etherape, you can see all connections going in and out.
Etherape gives you a graphical representation.
Right. And it's pretty cool. But you can see that there's like connections going to, you know, one website and to another one. And you can see like one computer is making 10 connections out. Well, I then changed it and put this tunneling out, and it showed only one connection going, leaving mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all TCP connections. So any UDP, like DNS, would still run through the local network, but it's, you know, it's just DNS. So that's why I really wanted to talk about it, because it's pretty cool. And then...
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I did this week is I wanted to get into my home router and change some of the configurations.
And that's why it broke.
No. But what I did is I did this tunneling into my computer here, and then it's as if I'm sitting here at my home, and I was able to get into the green interface on my router and change configurations. Where normally, you know, I have it blocked from the outside coming in, so otherwise I wouldn't have been able to connect in. So it actually worked out really nice. It was pretty cool.
Cool?
Yeah.
Anybody, did you do anything funky with SSH there, Kevin?
I'm sorry. I don't really have anything to add on that.
All right, so I guess we're going on to listener feedback.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
We had a few things coming in this week.
I have quite a few.
We got more comments on the website than we have in a long time.
Right, I get all those as emails too, so
I
count them all and listener feedback.
Yeah, so one of them was about using RSS readers or not using it. And I don't know how to say this person's username. E-A-S-Z? Ease?
Ease. I'd just say his name is Ease.
All right. It's saying, I don't use RSS readers, but I do use the RSS feed links from sites that I want to keep track of. And then he continues to complain about how he's behind the bamboo curtain and feed burner doesn't work. Yeah. Which actually, I need to grab our SMLR feed link and I can stick it in there. I wonder, it's probably what he's still using because we have feed burner but feed burner is just reading our link, our RSS. So yeah. What else?
We had Scott Dowdle, who, if I can click, there we go. Oh no, what's it doing? Okay.
Are you okay there, man?
Yeah, I'm okay. Scott Dowdle, who said that we were talking about TTY Record and mentioned it doesn't seem to be available in the Fedora repos. Well, he checked it out, and we're right. It's not available in the Fedora repos, because Scott's a big Fedora guy. He is the author of Montana Linux, which is a Fedora respin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
But he also says that they've made improvements to script, so it does all the TTY record rec stuff. And that's why Fedora doesn't use it anymore, because they have script.
Ah, that makes sense. He would be the person to ask about that, huh?
Yes.
Very cool. See, we had a comment from Eagle Bajork?
Yes.
And I know you responded to that, so you want to talk about it?
Yes. He said that he was a lot of praise for our show, yada, 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 and some other stuff. And he was saying that he liked KDE, but it was a little heavy for him. He was using XFCE, and I asked him if he'd ever tried the Razer desktop, because it's Qt-based, so it's very KDE-like, especially if the window manager you use behind it is KWin. Because you can select what window manager you want to use. Mm-hmm. By default, it uses OpenBox, but you can select KWin and use KWin behind Razer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very cute, very KDE-like. So.
Hmm. Cool. Mary, she actually sent us back an email saying that on Monday, the day after the show, she tried to run Linux OS, or the legacy OS 2.
Yeah.
And it booted
right up, yeah.
Yeah. So she said she guesses the bits had to settle in the hard drive.
Now that one confused me for a moment, because I actually, back in the day, ran OS 2. So was this a new spin of OS 2 that came from the grave, or what?
And then we have from Mike, who says he loves our content, but my laugh is a little grating.
Right.
So we're sorry, Mike, and I believe I responded to you with a PDF file on some settings in VLC you can use that should help you with that.
And, cool. And Mike is clearly wrong.
What?
It's not a little grating. It's immensely.
And there you go, Mike, right there for you. Well, what I did is I listened to your comments, and I went through and made some changes on the, on our recorder. And what I'm trying to do is I turned on a few features, seeing if that's going to help. And so hopefully either it's going to make it worse, or
if
hopefully
it makes
this
it
will
worse,
fix it.
Please let us know.
Yeah. So what I did is I turned on auto leveling or no, auto gain, so that when we're quiet, it'll bring that up. But I also turned on the, what did I say, the...
Compression?
Compression, yeah, compressor, so that it's supposed to bring down the tops or cut off the highs. So we'll see if that helps. Hopefully it does.
Compression usually improves audio pretty significantly.
Yeah. Well, this is in the in our recorder itself. It's not like a hardware compressor.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see if how well it works.
And then Lee also responded to the same to Mike's post, and he said, "Oh, I like Matt's laugh."
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there we go. We've got both sides of the argument there.
Don't ever change, Matt.
And then Brad Alexander was one of two respondents. And we have the other respondent here in the studio with us today.
Yeah.
Who said, Matt is right.
Yeah.
Italian in Switzerland. So.
Yeah, in fact, the funny thing is, like, a day or two after your program, in my mailbox, I get this, and it was a solicitation for travel.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was, you know, why would you say buongiorno in Switzerland, and goes on to talk about this part of Switzerland that is speaks Italian. So there are three languages in Switzerland.
Vindicated.
French, German, and Italian.
Vindicated.
All right.
So Mary, if you're listening, $5.
We have one from Julius, and this was... He commented back way on
episode
62, and says that, that's the Barbecue at Panera show.
Yes.
Where Mary did a review of Barbecue Linux.
Right.
And he says, I think it's a he, maybe it's a girl, I don't know, it doesn't say anything. But anyway, the...
Julius?
Julius?
You know women that are named Julius?
I know, no I don't. Okay. Alright. So, and he says that there's over 50 window managers now. And
oh, wow.
So Mary says that she may be doing Barbecue Linux next week.
All right.
Yeah.
There's probably more than 50. I remember...
No, in barbecue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I remember seeing... This might have been at PenguinCon some years back, but... Someone did an entire talk on just showing all of the different window managers.
Would there be enough time to do that?
And Chatter asked us if we had any plans to cover the new bcache feature in the Linux kernel, which allows you to use an SSD drive as a caching drive, so frequently accessed content can be cached to the SSD instead of to the regular hard drive so that it comes off. And it figures out what you seek most and will cache that information on the SSD. And I said, no, but that's very similar to the feature at work that we use for that. It's baked into the Dell perk cards and the LSI Mega RAID cards, which basically the Dell perk card just are LSI Mega RAID cards rebranded, where they do that too. It's built into the firmware on the perk cards.
I would think that cache is stuff that gets written to a lot.
And read from.
Yeah.
Cache rules all.
So, are we at the point now where SSD drives no longer wear out?
Well, because they have wear leveling, so they're the technology is much, much better on them that they wear out much slower.
Because what I've heard, for instance, is you should never put your swap on a SSD drive or it'll kill it.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if this is in any way similar to that.
Although I was listening to a podcast a couple weeks ago, and they said that there's been a couple tests on hardware or on the SSDs, and they're lasting... like 2 to 3 times longer than what the manufacturers actually say the warranty is for.
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, if they say it can run for, you know, so many writes, I don't know, 10,000, say it's 100,000 writes, it's actually lasting, you know, 300,000 to 400,000 writes.
Just put in more RAM and create a RAM drive.
Well, have well, that's you heard basically about what those it is. New memristors?
No, I haven't. Oh. I mean, I heard about the theory, but...
No, they're real. They have built them. The only reason they haven't brought them to market yet is because they're figuring out the marketing on them.
Okay.
Really? HP is really into these memristors.
I remember reading about it a long time ago.
They want to sell off all their regular computers before they bring these memristors out. They're incredible technology. The memristor can either be storage, or it could be processor, it could be RAM, it could be whatever you want it to be.
Wow.
So you could flip a switch and increase your processor, flip a switch and increase your RAM. Now, I mean, when I say flip a switch, it's not a physical switch, it would be settings. But yeah, pretty wild stuff.
Interesting.
Memristors.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah. Mike Kovacs at work turned me on to that, so.
Good. I have to watch out for that one.
Yeah. I think that's the end of our email list.
Yes, I had no other... I had no other news. I mean, listener feedback.
I think Joel, he said that, Joel McLaughlin, he's, you know, he's on Tilts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he said that he uses, what's that, Tiny RSS?
Oh.
I'm trying to find it right now on my...
RSS. Have no inclination to use an RSS.
I use Feedly every day.
Yeah, and I think you responded with Feedly. What is Feedly, and how does that compare to, like, say, other services?
It's cloud-based, and the reason that matters for me is I might be accessing on any number of different computers. It could be mobile, or at work, or at home, or what have you, so I want something that's cloud-based.
Yeah.
It has, at this point, it has, I got in there when I heard Reader was being canceled, so it pulled everything from my Reader account.
Cool.
It's configurable, so you can set it up that it'll work much the same as Reader did, or you can set it to be more like a magazine kind of thing, put up a bunch of different articles and let you click on it. I mean,
all right.
Yeah. But I mean, I've got like 50 RSS feeds that I follow. So it just, I know you prefer to just go to the websites individually.
Correct, I do.
Because I do listen to this show, you know. I got so many, and you know, one of the things about a feed reader is there are some things that I have in there that are very infrequent. So they might publish something, you know, once every couple of months in a few cases, and I don't want to be constantly going back to the website to see if they've posted anything.
It takes 2 seconds.
Yeah, I have 50 of them.
What's not my fault? So I'd be sitting. I'd be,
well,
read.
So I'm doing it the efficient way.
It's not my fault. You're too eclectic.
Eclectic.
Information is good.
All right.
Focused information.
All right, so I think that's the end of our listener feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go on to...
Featured Music of the Week.
And Matt had a suggestion.
Yes.
Well,
I don't know if we can use it, though.
Yeah, just because it's aired on TV doesn't mean that it's open for rebroadcasting.
Right.
And Matt's suggestion was to do, what was that again? Something from America's Got Talent?
Yeah, America's Got Talent. It was this little six-year-old girl screaming metal.
Death metal. Yeah.
Here.
Something about zombies.
Matt, you want to play 10 seconds of that? I think we can go with 10 seconds.
Yeah, I gotta add technology and being able to control. I'll skip the ad in 1 second. Skipping ad.
You really gotta find the YouTube video, though.
Okay, Heaven 5, she was an honor place, so we gave her.
Here it is.
And that's a little 6-year-old?
That was a little 6-year-old girl.
That's
doing that.
Really disturbing, Matt.
It's great. It's, if they ever put an album out, I will buy it. So.
All right. Let's go. All right. So what I want to do is I'm going to play something from Nine Inch Nails.
All right.
They
well, be that way.
They have, what is it? They released one of their albums on, and the I can't think of the name right now. What's the license? The Creative Commons license. And the album's Ghosts. It's 1 through 4, and I will include the link for it. It's on archive.org. And what it is there's a bunch of music, and it was just a couple of the guys got together to hash out some, you know, just be creative and make some music, and this is what came out. There's a few things I know Matt said he liked. There's a few that I liked. So I think it was 31 from, or it's track 31. It's from Ghost 4. So, you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 93. Welcome back, Kevin, again.
Thank you. Thank you. Always a pleasure.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Kevin O'Brien.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.
That's funny. It's like deja vu. I think I spelled it wrong.
Yeah. Deja vu?
Yeah. Is that... That is not deja vu. That's all I know.
Sorry. Anyway, yeah, I say that because I screwed up and didn't record the first time we went through this.